Running Wild with Christine, sex, success, and other slippery rabbit holes. Welcome to episode 31, 32? I don't know. We'll find out. I am here today with Christina Lau.
Hi.
Hi, Christina. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited. Christina and I have been talking for a few months now about this episode, so I'm stoked. I don't have a working title for you guys yet. I'll come up with it after because we're going to talk about a lot of things.
Yeah, we both dwell on words a bit too much now, to our own detriment in this case. We have no title.
No title. That's good. That's what I wanted, maybe my tombstone, no title. So Christina is a musician, actress, I want to say poet.
I want to say poet too.
Right?
I don't know how well that would be received by other people, but I want to say it, so great. I love that you just did.
Yeah, and all kinds of other backgrounds, so I feel like we're both just as chaotic. So do you want to tell everyone, as per the tradition, who you are, where you're from? That's going to take our time. Right, okay.
get comfortable. I will try and tell you this as quickly as possible. I'm from Hong Kong originally. I lived in New Zealand and Australia and the UK. I most recently moved over from London. And I did my first degree in international business, started a second degree in music, and then got into the London School of Musical Theatre, where I studied musical theatre, graduated, and then went into development as a songwriter and performer, and then found my way to Vancouver.
Yeah. I'm
lucky enough to have dual citizenship. Thank you, Mother. and so I've been living and loving Vancouver for 3.5 years now.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So we've got musical theater, international business. I saw also kung fu and stage combat. Are there things that you don't do?
I am a terrible cook.
Good.
I like to think that I arrange food at best. There are many things. I couldn't write a book. Just bad timing when I went to that book launch. My goodness, I just couldn't imagine having to assemble so many thoughts into one theme.
Arguably, it is not assembled that way.
I'm sure it is. I'm too modest. But I look forward to reading it because I did read some excerpts and I opened the page on New York and you read about New York, and I have this unhealthy, healthy obsession with New York at the moment.
It's a very, very fun city.
I know, just all I want to do is go there again and again.
It's so fun. But basically, so recently you finished a tour in the UK with the 20th Century Boy musical.
That's correct, yes. I was playing Helen Shapiro, who's a well-known British singer from the 60s, and Chalita Secunda, who was Mark Bolan's stylist. Mark Bolan is the lead character in this musical about his life and sad demise. It was incredible. I couldn't put into words, again, I'm saying this, apologising for my lack of words, but the cast, the team that we worked with was just unbelievable. I had such an awe-inspired 4 months, 5 months or so, or almost I should say, with these people who are just so good at what they do. They're just so good at what they do, and they lead with their hearts, and they speak their minds, lead with their hearts, and throw their bodies around on stage like you would not believe.
That's amazing. Mm.
It was quite incredible. They're some of my favorite human beings.
Yay. And so during that 4 month tour, you also did a lot of writing for your upcoming EP.
I did.
I've been told.
I did. Yeah, I did some writing. I this is where I dabbled into what I call bad poetry. I'd started a book called The Artist's Way.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I'd kind of really started reimagining my life. And I think you and I are very similar creatures. from our limited interactions in that we're constantly seeking evolution.
Yeah.
And this, I have an amazing online personal trainer.
Yeah.
My dear friend Mark, and so I was doing 20-minute workouts. I was feeling good. I was, you know, on stage every night doing what I love, and we were moving all the time, which for this kind of transnational kid, yeah, felt like home in itself.
Yeah.
Living out of one suitcase, and I was just. I was in this kind of period of new invention of the next mm-hmm. chapter. And so I did start writing poetry, and that poetry gave birth to a number of song ideas, two of which I'm very, very grateful to have realized and recorded while I was in London before I left. So
are these the two that I just listened to?
One of them you just listened to, yeah.
Ah, you guys, I just listened to the unreleased versions, and I can say that you guys are in for some awesome, awesome stuff.
I hope so.
And so is this Rose, the one that was, mm-hmm. Mm. So the song is about lots of things.
How best to describe the song?
Yeah.
I think in a nutshell, I was looking out over the rows of empty seats as we were doing sound check for one of the shows in one of the most incredible theatres in England, I can't remember which city I was in actually.
Doesn't matter.
No, it was just stunning, and I remember looking out, and it was around the time of the latest American high school shootings.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, there was this kind of tidal wave of the Me Too movement and the wake of that, and so much
heaviness.
Yeah, so much heaviness. So many conversations about war
groups.
And political tension and. Diversity and exclusion,
mm-hmm.
and we have this conversation.
Binary constructs.
Binary constructs.
Us versus them.
Yeah, right versus wrong, and yeah. They're not being nearly enough grey.
Yeah.
Sometimes for good reason, sometimes not. And so part of me was kind of thinking, okay, you've got this generation Z, you've got the millennials, you've got all these people, everyone is talking about how individual, how unique, how different they are.
Yeah.
And yet, every night I come onto this stage and I play to a whole bunch of people who are sitting right next to each other, who are coming together.
Yeah.
And we do this, we stand in rows. We it was an observation that I just had never put together.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, so many people are talking about what their opinions are.
Yeah.
Rather than making what I believe to be base level observations about how we operate as a society or
yeah.
as a culture, whichever culture we happen to be in, because I'm from quite a few.
Yeah.
So part of me sort of went, okay, what is something that allows people to just start thinking about what is,
mm-hmm.
rather than what needs to happen?
Yeah.
Which is very important. That's a very important conversation, but I didn't feel prepared to have that conversation
yeah.
yet. I wanted to have a conversation about kind of
the
taking
base level.
Stock.
Yeah.
Yeah, and going, you know what, we're in rows. We sit in rows in funerals. We sit in rows in weddings. We sit in rows in auditoriums in our schools. We sit in rows in mosques. We have rows. We march in rows.
Yeah.
And we watch shows in rows and we sit in theatres and it's endless what we queue. Very
yeah.
British thing is to queue.
Yeah, it's also a Vancouver thing.
Yeah, and a Vancouver thing, I'm sure. And so I thought, you know what? What I'm really passionate about is giving people freedom of choice. And in a lot of popular songs and pop music, it can kind of give way. You know, the music can give way to the message sometimes, not
yeah.
all the time. But that's not the direction I was choosing to go to in this new evolution.
Yeah.
I remember 15 minutes ago how I said I was going to try and make this really short.
Sorry. That is not what this podcast is for, so I am glad.
So, the Rose was born from that, and as soon as I thought it, an hour later, inspiration hit me like a freight train and fell out of my
mm-hmm.
of my face and fingers onto that. What you'll eventually hopefully all hear is the guitar parts and the vocals
yeah.
of the song.
And I think it's very interesting because the song does, you know, let you in on this, like, why do we
poses the question.
You know?
It poses the question. It does not ask you for an answer. It just asks you to think.
Cheers.
Cheers. We're drinking mimosas because it's Saturday.
Christina brought some mimosas for us, and I was just like, this is why. I knew.
I couldn't decide between tea or mimosas. I have this really lovely rose tea, English rose tea, that I brought back from England. Sorry, customs. I think I was all right to do that.
I think you're okay with tea.
and I was gonna bring that, but I thought mimosas would be better for the weekend.
Oh, absolutely! Mm-hmm. I'm very excited. But yeah, to go back to the song, I think that for me was a very interesting thing that you have said in our prep is that the difference between power of opinion and freedom of choice of like art being. Whichever medium, because you've obviously worked in a great variety of mediums. I am currently doing that.
You are.
And so it's interesting to see that whatever the art form or the creative form, that is the one thing in our lives, at least in my experience, that I've been taught to think about. Like, it was like you go to the museum, you stare at this piece of art, no one is telling you what it is. They're like, how do you feel? What do you see? What, how does that make you feel?
I love that statement. I love that statement of how does something make you feel?
Mm-hmm.
What are you feeling as a result of seeing this, this
or hearing the song? That, for me, that's the central thing where it's like, I'm actually giving you my opinion when I'm creating, about whatever. Even if my opinion is a question mark, it doesn't have to be a statement.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. But then... the choice is yours, what you make with it.
Yes.
And that's the only, literally the only thing in our lives where that is what we're taught to do. And we should do that with everything.
I would almost completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we should do that with absolutely everything.
Okay, yeah,
because
probably
there are
some
situations. There are situations where a red light is definitely
a red light.
And
unless you're turning right in Canada, which
in
I
Canada,
didn't know.
Let's have a conversation about this, because that scared me so much when I moved here.
Yeah.
I was like, where is everybody going? This is such a free
city.
It's
so weird.
Just doing what they want.
No, you can turn right on a red light in Vancouver, and I think in the US also.
I believe.
But in Europe, it's definitely not the case. So I have to retrain my brain every time I go home to be like, sit.
I know. I was back in London. Thankfully, I didn't drive when I was back in London. But because I think I probably would have driven onto oncoming traffic.
Yeah, same.
In some horrifying sequence of events. But yeah. But I think I do agree that in most cases, art is one of the most wonderful mediums that is subjective.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I give you my bullheaded, arrogant, stubborn opinion about something that is founded or unfounded, at best, it is subjective.
Yeah.
And that's the joy of art, because
yeah.
I think, there are so many different, and this is the other thing, is it's not binary in this construct, it's not necessarily binary, where, that's how I approach my art, and other people have a very different opinion, and
absolutely.
And I'm so open to hearing that. But I think that's where I draw a lot of inspiration from is, coming back to the observation, rather than a kind of black and white, yes and no, 0-1 mentality.
Yeah, as if everything you learned, saw, or heard was meant to inform an action or a decision or an opinion that is either or, and it's like, well, like you're saying, where does the ground zero begin? What is natural? Because we're so socialized and so educated into being the society that we are today that, a lot of things like we say, oh, that's natural. It's like, well, no, it's a social construct.
It's a very interesting, we've moved to semantics now.
Yeah.
when something is natural, it is exactly, and having, both of us are transnational kids.
Mm-hmm.
So when something is just natural or something is just normal,
yeah,
in one city and one country, it is not necessarily normal in another. And I think maybe, perhaps you and I have a different perspective because of that moving around.
Yeah.
But I would be bold enough to say and maybe brave enough to say now that I'm meeting so many young people, and I say young in the sense of Generation Z, who are kind of in their teens, 20s, 30s. I'm surrounded by, I work for a recording school part-time, I'm surrounded by these passionate, empowered and intelligent human beings who are not subscribing to what I agree is an antiquated cultural norm. They're not steeped in that system anymore. Yeah. They've removed themselves from that system, and I could not begin to go into how that has happened because I think it's society, it's politics, it's media. There's so much to do with media. There's so much to do with information. The concept of advertising, just in and of itself.
I know.
So many different...
We were talking about this with regards to branding ourselves, and it's
I know. And
but it's a freaking science.
Yeah. But then you think about the concept of the actual original concept of branding yourself with a logo, cows.
Yeah.
And where we have derived our meanings from.
Yeah.
And we've lost sight in some ways, but we've reinvented in others.
And this is the thing. So going back to semantics and going back to generational differences is the fact that, you know, we've come to this time where, like you said, there's an overload of information, an overload of media input, but also this insistence on labeling, whether it is labeling the generations or labeling ourselves or labeling our opinions or... And that sort of insistence, parallel or combined with the assumption, the faulty assumption, that all of us agree on the definitions of the terms that we use.
Like, this is so,
a couple of weeks ago when I was talking to Lucy Segu on the episode about feminism, black feminism, we sat there and firstly defined the definition of intersectionality, which is a word that we throw around a lot and we don't always know where it comes from and, you know, what it means. And so I feel like this is the same thing. Like when we use, you know, oh, I'm for or against this. It's like, well, there's like a fuckload of like in the middle of these two. Like, yeah, why so are there just two? Yeah. And also, why do we assume that me and you have the same definition? Like as if they were natural, you know, as if we were just like, I'm born knowing what that word means or what it means to you, especially when it comes to, like, identity ones that you identify to, you know?
I think that's a really interesting... As you were talking, I was, you know, part of one of my personalities in the background. I was like, oh, I want to say something. Identity is just such a big thing.
Yeah.
And when you have these conversations about what your definition is of something, if you get that far... One thing that I'm starting to realize, and the light bulb that went on in the back of my brain, was that used to work when we didn't move across the globe all the time.
Yeah.
And keep and get
and had one career and didn't
we had one
reinvent
career.
Ourselves.
We grew up in a village.
Yeah.
We
there were 30 people that we knew.
There were even 1,000 people. Yeah. We now how many people do you have as friends on Facebook?
Too many.
Right? So now the definition of friend is different.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of technology.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's what we have not been paying attention to is the evolution of our language as a society.
I 100% agree.
That has then, it has then impacted our social constructs, but without
Absolutely.
Us catching up.
Without our awareness of it, which is ridiculous because we're the ones affecting that change. Not affecting.
Thank you.
That change.
important distinction.
See, more words. but I mean, we're the ones making those changes. So how are we, like, without being conscious, or what's the word that you prefer to use? Self-effacing.
Yes.
Can you define self-effacing for our listeners, please?
Gosh, can I define self-effacing?
Google it.
I did define self-effacing. And okay, how I would say it in my layman's terms, and then I'll look it up and tell you, oh, this would be a good exercise, actually.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about doing this on my social media a little bit more now, actually, is what do I think something means? And then, how would I explain it?
The dictionary.
It? And then what does Merriam-Webster say?
Yeah.
So my definition of self-effacing is one's ability... to understand their capability mm-hmm. to do something, mm-hmm. right? So that's self-efficacy, is not knowing yourself, it's knowing your ability mm-hmm. in a true fashion. Mm-hmm. Let's look at self-efficacy.
Oh, yeah, let's do that. In the meantime, I'll have more mimosas.
Excellent. Self-effacing is not claiming attention for oneself, retiring and modest.
What? No, that's a different spelling.
No. Self-effacing. Oh, wait.
You guys, this is...
Efficacy.
There we go.
Is the ability to produce a desired or intended result. Mm-hmm. So self-effacing... Sorry, I shouldn't have said self-effacing. I should have said self-efficacy. And self-efficacy is the ability to produce a desired or intended result.
For yourself. Since it's self-efficacy.
Yes. Yes. Because efficacy is just the result. Yeah. So see, there we go. I got it completely wrong. To be self-effacing
is to be modest.
Self-deprecating. Or but self-efficacy is to know your ability to achieve something.
So if you replace our liked term that we use, which is consciousness, that's the mm-hmm. branded term, is the awareness and the consciousness of our actions and of our relationships and of our whatever, with rather than just being aware of what you are doing, now you're aware of what you might be able to do or what you are able to do or what the options might be.
Yeah.
And that's a huge difference.
I think it is a huge difference. I think it's, I don't know. I haven't delved into how deep you go into the roots of self-efficacy as a definition. But I do think that it's, for us, the more we understand what we are capable of doing, the easier it is going to be for us to take the necessary actions for us.
Yeah.
Whereas the reason I say that, and it's, I'm working really hard on being brave enough to have these conversations. Mm-hmm. Because when it comes to words, it's so easy for people to tear you down. And for example, how embarrassing it was that I just got the entirely word, that word entirely wrong, but I need to be okay with that. I need to be okay with exploring words.
And you need to be in also conversations with people. I'm not patting myself on the back or anything, but we all need to be in conversations where that's okay. We're actually together learning. I'm not here to be haha, you're wrong. What's the point of that?
Yeah.
There's no joy in my, you know what I mean? There's no learning.
But that's what
stops people.
It stops people in so many ways. Is if somebody, and I watch so many debates, or I'm at a table with people that I, have respect for, and all of a sudden someone says something and I just go, you didn't need to shoot that person down.
Yeah, it's so pedantic and counterproductive.
I would have liked for that person to have a bit more of a chance to discover where they wanted to go with something.
Yeah.
And I think that might be a huge projection on my part, because I would have liked to have been given that chance. And I fuck up all the time.
We all do.
I'm sure we all do, but I think I'm quite an exception. And I think that's because I'm spending a lot of time training myself to let myself do that.
Yeah.
I come from an Asian culture, mm-hmm. and, as stereotypical as that might sound, I had a lot of pressure that I put on myself, and it could have been culturally, it could have been self-imposed, who knows?
Yeah.
And I don't need to get into it on this podcast.
we can get into it in a different setting.
But, there's certain expectations, and I have spent a long time learning how to play. I'm still learning how to play. I'm still learning how to say, I fucked that up.
Or I don't know.
Or I don't know. Or I think I know. And then go, oh, right, shit. I stand corrected.
Yeah.
You know, that whole, the whole concept of conflict resolution, for someone who has been, I've been brought up and kind of something got stuck in my mind that unless it was perfect, I shouldn't present it. Unless it was,
And that's so hard because, and it's so funny because I'm hearing so many resonances between the last few episodes, the question that you asked a few minutes ago about, we need to be more aware of our capabilities. Mm. It reminds me of the conversation with Morton about design and ethics. Like, right. What are we creating? Like, yeah. What are the capabilities we're making?
Yeah.
At the same time as the conversations about fucking up, which was in last week's episode with Joe, because her bottom line was like, it's okay to fuck up.
Mm.
And then you have to just admit how you fucked up. Apologize for, you know, yeah, if it had any effect.
Yeah.
And then ask that person how they might want you to fix your fuck up.
Yeah.
If it had an effect. And I feel like this is, we're all actually having the same fucking conversation. Like, on different levels of our lives and the things that we do. Because... Yeah. Because there's such a pressure on, like, having the perfect Instagram that's added to the pressure that we might have from our cultures or ourselves or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Of, like, this is what a Instagram looks like. This is your color scheme. This is your gradient. God forbid you change your mind. Like, God forbid you fuck up and post on the wrong day at the wrong time with the wrong hashtag. Like,
I know, the loneliness of social media. Of trying to get it right, spending half an hour on a post where you're looking at a small square that's an image of you.
Yeah.
And I do that, but I mean, you look at, they're all images of me. I mean, they are.
It's so tough. It's so tough. And I think that we forget that the point is to play.
Yeah. I think I spent a lifetime learning how to. I do that for a job, and I'm still learning how to do it.
Yeah.
I had a wonderful conversation with someone when we were on tour with one of my friends, and I said, you know, we're really lucky that I think we were frustrated about someone not having the right words, and there was there was some kind of minor conflict. And I said, you know what, we're really, really lucky that we spend our lives reading words. We spend our lives interpreting words, and it's very important for us to not take for granted we need to make sure that we don't take for granted the fact that others
listen.
Are not doing that. Others are going into, you know, traditional systems, not all others, but a lot of other people have a very different attitude towards life. They're not talking about feelings for a living.
Mm-hmm.
I am a songwriter. I have to remind myself, I talk about feelings for a living.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do. So me being able to tell you how I feel about something, I'm already in so much more of an advantageous position because I am,
you practice,
for no other reason that I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I talk about I have multiple diaries. I write every day. I write 3 pages a day. One of the artist way things is the morning pages.
Naomi was talking about that too.
It's a wonderful book for the right people, for whenever you reach that stage where you decide that that's good for you. But it's very much about sitting down and doing the work. And we don't have in our school systems something that allows us to nurture emotional intelligence. And that is that's a big, big issue with me. But music is there to do that. Music is a great art form. Poetry is an amazing art form.
Yeah.
They're mainstream art forms that can help.
Yeah.
They're not the total solution, I don't think, by any means. But I think they're one channel.
And you know, this actually reminds me of tying this to what you were saying about Rose, is like the Me Too and the heaviness in the air and all of that. Like, I feel like a lot of the conversations that are and aren't being had are about, what do we do? Like, what do we do with these horrible men? What do we do with the survivors? And it's like, no, how do they feel?
Mm-hmm.
How do we feel? And, like, the entire conversation is, like, completely about actions and not about feelings. And even, I was talking to Chris Erickson, who was on an episode really early on in the podcast and who's coming back, so stay tuned. But he is a professor at UBC. And we had lunch last week, and he was like, we were talking about consent and how to talk to young people about consent. Right. More on that in a different episode. But this conversation's got me thinking about, you know, this emotional intelligence piece, which is a huge part of both our consent culture, our lacking consent culture, and in general, how we exchange with other humans.
Yeah.
Because the biggest problem is communication.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Words.
I would agree. I would absolutely agree. I think when you said, you know, it's everyone's talking about action. I think action's really important.
Yeah, but
it's
of course.
It's about the series of events.
Yeah.
It's about the series in which you do something.
Yeah.
If you take action without being well informed,
or without,
it's going to be negative action.
Or processing why your information is such as, or your feelings are such as, what your motivation is, whether it is information or gut feeling or, you know, strong emotion. Because a lot of times, even in your personal life, not on such a big scale, but like, I'm like, why am I doing this? Am I doing this for the right reasons? Like, how does my feeling impact my action?
Yeah, and who's thinking this? I have a conversation, I talked about one of my personalities earlier, but I also, I've spent the last year, and I don't define things by, I don't go to one book and then religiously kind of follow a certain path. I'm quite, I'm a bit of an, I guess, aggregator of different schools of thought. And I decided to do an exercise where I would follow my guts around, because I realized that my mind and my heart and my guts were not talking to each other.
Yeah.
And actually, I couldn't tell who was who. And what, so they weren't getting along, but the first, so this was a probably a good example. They weren't getting along. What I could have done is said, okay, I'm just going to go with my mind. I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Take that action. And I have done that in the past. And my heart gets unhealthy and my guts start ignoring me.
Yeah.
Which is really rude. but so what I decided to do was, okay, I guess the first point of this journey is going to be me saying every time something happens, and this is laborious.
Like, yeah.
This is an arduous task, but it's worth it to put that effort in. Every time something incites a reaction, I go, okay, is this my mind reacting? Is this my guts reacting? Is this my heart reacting?
Yeah.
And as I was paying attention to just those three different things, they became more vocal.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds strange.
Not to me, but I'm sure.
Increased, like increasing numbers of articles on the science of your gut health being, and your guts having intuition, and you know, I mean, that's what they call it, a gut feeling
reason.
And your mind not being the only control center, and you know, in our earliest stages of evolution, us not being, us thinking from our guts, because we had to eat food to survive, and we're not as evolved as we like to think we are.
No,
we really aren't.
I'm
hopeful.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're at where we're at. Like, you know, there's no tricking our age as a species.
No, and also I think that's a very interesting question to pose socially, you know, of like, look around you. Who do you think has been ruling? Because it hasn't been the mind. Like, if I have any opinion about this, again, humble opinion, but like, look at everything that's happening around us. If we were logical, indeed, beings ruled by the mind, this is not the society that we would live in.
No.
This chaos that we're experiencing at the minute is definitely not something that's ruled by the mind. Like, the symptoms are different than that, you know? And so,
well, who do you think is ruled?
Well, depends what we're talking about, but but I feel like, I feel like we're definitely ignoring our hearts and our minds as like as a general rule, and our guts aren't always like, I try to tell people to follow their gut a lot more than just follow the prescribed rules, but in this sense, in this conversation, the gut might not be the smartest thing to follow,
but,
you know?
And you might not know what that sounds like, what your gut is saying.
Yeah.
If your gut is poisoned and you've had a lifetime of poisoning, your gut's not going to be in a healthy position to tell you where to go either.
No, and I think, and I think we sort of equate, like, you know, vengeance and those bad feelings with, like,
visceral.
And I feel like we equate it with the heart, but it's actually, in my opinion, I would think that it's more of a gut feeling than a heart feeling, because heart is sensitive and fragile.
Well, I mean, my heart was a grumpy old man. I'll say I love was. That image.
Yeah, he died.
Nobody liked him anyway. He was not fun. But everyone's is different. Everyone has a different, and it comes down to circumstance, right? Mm-hmm. You know, something can happen and because I don't have any triggers around something, my mind might be the first to jump to it, and I might turn around and say, oh, okay.
Logical.
Let's logically answer this question, or let's find a solution that is based on my mind. But the combination of the three working together is always going to be the right thing.
You know,
but it's finding out how to get them all healthy. That's a whole other.
That's
a whole other conversation. But often I find that, especially because of my obsession with language and with words, you know, that's where I start. I start by writing. I do not interpret. I love to watch dance.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't process my emotions like that, in that way. And I don't process them in a visual way. Like, I don't paint. But that speaks to different people.
For sure.
And it allows them to do that.
And I think even if it is words, there's so many different ways. And I feel like this is sort of, on a personal level, why I am now gravitating towards spoken word, like podcast and video and, you know,
slam
even just
poetry.
Instagram. No, not even that. Like, just speaking as I speak. Like, the lack of preparation that my speaking takes is where the fun stuff happens. Because if I sit down at a keyboard, then my OCD brain sees the words and goes, ooh, like, wait, are you really sure you want to say this? Are you really want to put that word next to that word after that word?
Yeah.
And that's also, I think, why my writing is very spoken. Because if I start to actually practice the writing that I was taught in school, or the, you know, sort of academic constructed, I always feel like I'm missing information. Like, I need more information to be more logical, to put the words together in the right way, quote unquote, because that's ingrained.
So question then, when you were writing your book, were you recording with a dictaphone and then you
I was typing it? But I was trying to, like, type and drink, like, you know, like, not sit in the morning and be like, all right, this is how many words we're gonna, like, that does not work. It's like verbal diarrhea or nothing, you know?
So
it would kind of have to come out. It was like bursting out rather than being, okay, so I'm gonna write a piece about this today. Like, that doesn't work for me. And proof is, I keep telling everyone on my social media that I'm about to write a piece that I have not written, because it just hasn't burst out of me yet.
Right.
You know?
Interesting.
It's very, but that's my personal process, which is, you know, relating to what you were saying, that's also why I don't really write fiction.
Right.
Because the images don't come to me like that. Whereas songs are definitely constructed of images, and, like, even the sounds that come with it, like,
they're themes on dreams, really.
Mm-hmm.
For me, anyway. Mine are a kind of mashup of dreams and nightmares.
Yeah.
And observations, really.
It's fascinating how, you know, even though words is the core, it's such a different thing. It's such a different beast.
Totally different. I mean, goodness, writing a book compared to writing a song, and the restrictions the limitations that you set when you have only 3.5 minutes to say something.
Yeah.
And less, really, because you're repeating a chorus most of the time, if you're writing pop songs. And also, you know, compared to having a book, and writing, but needing to keep on a much longer theme and keep people interested and invested in a long journey that, you know, a reader could be with you for weeks.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah. And I think that's the interesting part also, to go back to loneliness and why, you know, I feel like we gather as bros to listen to music or watch a show or, you know, experience something together. I feel like we often, I don't know, you tell me if that's the case for you, but construct the art form, like the creation act, as like this like lonely thing of, like, you know, and we were talking about this in prep, like the artist has to be some kind of an introvert, or like, you know, like the stereotype of, like, doing it on your own and in your little cave.
Yeah.
And actually, like, the crafting of, like, for example, my book was entirely a team effort with my editor, with, like, people around me, with the beta readers, and it's probably the same with you, you know, with the pianist and whoever's playing the music with you. There is some input there, whether it's, you know,
it's a very collaborative process.
Yeah, and I feel like we often ignore that.
I think we ignore it on the outside because it's glamorous to look at a lonely writer.
Yeah.
I think there's a glamorous kind of sadness around.
Yeah.
And I think that's
the glamour of loneliness.
It's a tough thing because you have, you know, as a writer, I've spent the longest time sort of going, well, if I don't have drama in my life, what am I going to write about?
Yeah,
right?
Oh my God.
It's that age old. Again, we're looking at binary thinking. We're looking at you're either a starving artist or you're an entitled pop star.
I mean, I
pick two things. But for me, I was kind of like, gosh, I don't really want to be dragging myself through emotional turbulence every day, so that I can have something to
create.
Write that.
Yeah.
And often, I actually reflected on that stereotype and realized that I wasn't writing. At those times.
Yeah.
I was writing when I was...
Coming out of them.
I was writing best... The best songs that I've written are observations.
Mm-hmm.
And they're partly mine, but they're partly other people's. They're partly conversations.
Yeah.
Not one of my songs has a start to finish...
Moment to it.
Yeah. It's not a start to finish of this is my life. Mm. And there may well be some that arrive in that way. But I think for the purposes of storytelling,
mm-hmm.
you don't look at someone who's written a film and say, well, you must have murdered 18 people in order to write that film. You don't get angry at somebody for not having actually done it. But for writers, and for especially with books,
yeah.
with things, you know, if you are choosing to write fiction, I know you didn't,
yeah.
but if you're choosing to write fiction or you're choosing to weave a story,
yeah.
to tell a story... I don't want to be held accountable for
the
being
words.
That
yeah.
person all the time. I've experienced so much of it.
So true.
But in so many different ways.
But I think even with nonfiction, to be honest, because for me that was the really funny thing, is that I relate to everything that you just said, but also for me it was when I was publishing the book, and like my family would be like, but it was fictionalized, right?
Ooh.
Like,
and you just,
like, it's
you
not
just
okay
kind of go,
with
was
say,
it, and walk away.
No, I was just like, no, it's not. Like,
oh,
it's
right.
definitely not.
Well,
like, I've changed words,
right.
names, like, for
sure.
privacy reasons, but,
yeah.
like, why do we not accept certain things not being the truth, and other things have to be a little fictionalized so that we're comfortable with it, you
right.
know? Like,
yeah.
where
well,
is
that's
this?
Probably because they were your family.
Even friends, like, I have even friends going, surely some of this. And I'm like, nah, like, really not. Like, this is how it is in my head. I mean, it's not the truth, because obviously my head filters somehow,
mm-hmm.
and my body filters
what
somehow, and my memory is faulty, like everyone's memory.
Of course, yeah.
But it's my truth, so that's, I don't understand what the what the question was about, you know? Because
yeah.
it's, yes, with my mother, I definitely know where it's coming from.
Yes,
but...
well, of course. I mean, I would make that assumption as well. I want to know. Certain things, I feel like you put this in a book.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting because that's where you see sort of like the individual stuff come out, and you see people who are more comfortable with certain levels of openness and not, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's...
comes back to that emotional intelligence.
Yeah,
when you're
exactly.
educated as a child, how many tools are you given to talk about those feelings?
Mm.
And to learn how to look at something... And say, I feel really uncomfortable. Interesting.
Exactly.
And then go, oh, why am I responding this way?
Preach.
And
yeah.
Yeah. And it's just what it's one of my favorite things to do now. At the same time, that does not make it easier.
No.
I am constantly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It sounds like a terrible. It sounds like
terrible
some kind of form of constipation, but it's not. It is kind of how it feels, though. Sometimes you're like emotionally, I think that's why a lot of people resort to violence. They resort to these frustrated
mm-hmm.
outbursts that are born from a repression that we can't locate.
But I think that's my modus operandi for writing as well. Because
yeah.
it just comes out once
out.
And the rest of the time is just like stuck in this place where...
Mm.
I'm not ready.
Right.
On some level, I'm not ready to see it out
okay.
on the paper. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the interesting... I think that's the same conversation of heart, mind,
and
gut.
Yeah.
It's like we spend so much time on what we do and what we see and what's out there mm-hmm. and not what's in there, which sounds super retarded to say, like, mm-hmm. in, you know, modern, what's it called, like, spiritual. Like,
spirituality. You know?
Yeah. But it's...
We're looking outside and we're not looking in. Yeah, I think that's a very, that's an astute observation. And I do think that it's, we're also so privileged to be able to say, make that statement.
Yes.
To even say that.
Yeah.
If we are in a position that we can talk about that statement, we are already inherently better off than most of the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next question that I have to myself and to anyone else who is in that same position is, okay, now what?
Yeah.
Now what do you want to do with that? Because if you can see something that somebody else can't, for good reason, and then you understand that you are in a position where you can see that iceberg, what do you do?
Yeah.
And how do you choose your specific way of doing it? Because you won't be able to fix everything. And part of me, we talked earlier about, you know, when I did my first degree, I studied politics for a time. I studied law for a time.
Yeah.
And I at a very basic level. And I could not subscribe to the concept of becoming a lawyer or a politician at that point in my life, because I realized that although I wanted the outcome.
Yeah.
The way that
the
it was
process
was
quote unquote.
The process, the way that it was that I would potentially and achieve that outcome, I didn't agree with.
Was
it
by furthering patriarchy and like all of the other systems of economics that we have in place,
or by fighting it,
imposing,
hopefully successfully, but imposing opinions in a way that didn't resonate
mm-hmm.
with me.
Mm-hmm.
I know incredible lawyers
who do
what they do, and they are built for doing that. My father is like ex-special forces.
Mm-hmm.
He was built for that job,
mm-hmm.
you know. And my mother, by contrast, is literally a walking heart.
Yeah.
And she would not be built for that job in any way, shape, or form. And she's just put on this earth to emanate goodness.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the big things that the conclusion that I came to with, when we do talk about saying, okay, I can see that little bit further, I think I can see that little
mm-hmm.
bit further, what's my chosen method of action?
Yeah.
And for me, that was where it started off as songwriting. I so enjoy acting because I think that acting in film and television
mm-hmm.
can be such a safe way for us to process emotions.
Yes.
Because a screen, for as much as people demonize a screen at the moment, especially with quite good reason, there are things that you can process with the safety of a screen
mm-hmm.
that allow you to think about your own life
mm-hmm.
without feeling unsafe.
And that's the thing, I feel, and I totally agree with you. I mean, I have been watching Grey's Anatomy for 15 years. Religiously. Totally confess.
You and many other people.
For
that's
sure.
That's been going for 15 years.
And I swear to God, at some points in my life, that was my emotional release.
Mm-hmm.
Every Thursday, I knew I would cry for at least 20 minutes
mm-hmm.
about someone else's fictional life.
Mm-hmm.
But that moment, that release of my stress, of
mm-hmm.
my potential heartbreak or lack thereof
mm-hmm.
or whatever unfulfilled wish I was, you know.
Yeah, or a new perspective that you were looking for but you didn't know the words.
Exactly,
for.
And I think that we underestimate those moments of like, and this is why these shows work, you know, and I think that's also why I'm now so interested in being in this industry as well, is because I'm like, okay, like we need to have better characters also. If this is going to continue to be the tool that we use for certain emotional intelligence lessons, like we need to construct better female characters, for example, blah, blah, blah.
Better representation across the board.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things that I think are starting to arise.
Mm-hmm. But it's such an interesting way to process, like you're saying, from a place where you're not at risk.
You're not at risk. Yeah, I think that's such a huge testament to what is it's called the entertainment industry, but there is so much more to it.
Yeah.
I just think this, I mean, I think it's a really, really noble.
It's our new books. Like, who reads anymore? This is very, so do I. I hope so.
I think everyone needs to. There's nothing like sitting down and reading a book.
I know, but like, if we're actually looking at the macro scale, like, the effect of a movie is so much greater than the effect of a book written today. I'm not talking about the classics that still, you know, that you have to read in school because people still have curriculums where they read. But like, it's just the effect is so much greater, like, just on a scale, you know. And so I tend to agree with you that, you know, if that's our what now, like, we need to be conscious that that's our what now, you know. Like, this
it's
is one, what
it's ours. Yeah, it's yeah, yours ours. And mine. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, but other people, there'll be there, it will be other things. I mean, I would love to meet the people who are, you know, doing the book revival and getting, you know, getting people to read books again, because there really is nothing like it.
No,
it really is. It when I'm actively reading, I feel just like when I'm actively working out, and I do my, I just do my 20 minutes a day, and once a week, twice a week, I'll do a bit more cardio, but it's just 20 minutes. When I'm actively doing that, I know that my body feels better.
Yeah.
When I'm actively reading, I know that my mind feels more articulate.
Yeah.
And I probably wouldn't have said self-effacing instead of self-efficacy if I was reading my Daphne du Maurier book as religiously as I should be right now.
No, but I think that's interesting also not to berate yourself for not doing the things. You know, like, set the barometer and set the expectation for yourself, but don't be afraid to let yourself down, kind of thing.
I think management of expectations is a whole other thing.
Communication, management of expectations, and like, well, emotional intelligence.
We just solved the world's problem.
You're welcome.
You are welcome.
But yeah, it's like you were saying though, these conversations are hard. You're gonna make mistakes.
They're hard to know where to begin. And everyone is in a totally different place, and whatever, without sounding wibbly, whatever that means, people are in the place that they're meant to be in for whatever reason. And I think when I started looking at, okay, how do I create a career that I'm proud of, that consolidates, that highlights all of the skill sets that I've kind of amassed over the years, and they're in totally different fields, and channel them into one industry. What's my approach going to be? How am I going to? And you know, I haven't even officially launched my new website, but my designer had said to me, you know, what do you stand for? And I said, you know what? I don't know if I can even articulate it. Like, I love this. And he was like, but you love words. That's where everything comes from. And it took him to say it to me. For me to then go, oh, right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course everything is about words for me. And that then took me to the next step, which then took me to the next step. And someone else will do the same thing with dance or with,
that's the thing. It often takes a mirror, but if you don't have the conversation, you won't get that.
If you're not looking, it comes down to it, if you're not looking.
Yeah.
You've got to look. I mean, we've got to look. And I love how you said that. We've got to look inside and out. And I think sometimes when the outside is so scary, because right now it kind of is, and I'm kind of overwhelmed. I voted today, and I spent hours reading about these political candidates, and then going, well, how much more do I read? Like, where's the end of this? What do I stop? Like, at what point do I feel confident in saying I voted?
And not
incite an argument from someone else who, because I don't say who I voted for. But I'm saying that I'm exercising my freedom of choice, and have I researched enough to be able to stand on social media or in a public space and say this? And I think it's so difficult sometimes because we have this massive amount of social media conversation and
conversations, chatter. Not even the word exactly, it's chatter.
It's chatter, sometimes it's noise, sometimes it creates tsunamis of movements that are so, so necessary. But I wonder how many people are spending time thinking, okay,
how do I feel about this?
How do I feel? And then what am I going to look up
yeah.
to create my my more awareness, researched opinion about this. And it's not about judgment of how long you take. It's about being able to articulate what you've done. If I put a disclaimer at the top and of a statement and say, I'm feeling really shitty about some girl who just kicked my ankle while I was walking down the street. That's a terrible analogy. It's so anticlimactic.
That's fine.
But, you know, if I say something like that that shows emotional flaring, but I put a disclaimer saying, just so you know, this is just an opinion and it's just how I'm feeling right now. People are not going to then take it into an as an
this is how it is.
You being an aggressive, violent person who has tendencies of kicking people in their ankles, or like as a retaliation for them kicking you in their ankles.
Yeah.
But you know, so I think it's important to kind of look at the chatter that's happening around, and I see so many people saying, when it comes to voting time, when it comes to different calls to action time, people talk on Facebook about what they think, how they feel. But very few people, I've got more and more people, actually, I must say, I'll reverse that statement. I have more and more people on my feed now, and more time for those people who tell me what they have done.
Yeah.
And why.
Yeah.
Rather than someone who says, I'm writing an open letter to this person, or, you know, this is my boldness, the Me Too movement, where I was like, how many of the people who have written that Me Too hashtag have written to their local police, local council? How many people have written letters to the government? How many people have written to try and actually use the channels that we have, whether they are flawed or not? And actually
taking
it the next step. Rather than going, hashtag, I'm with you. I'm with you as long as you are doing the work.
Yeah.
And I know that's a very sensitive topic.
No.
And it's scary for me to say that because I don't have all the information.
Of course not.
And some people...
Nobody does.
That's all they could do.
Yeah.
For some people, there is no... They could not do any more than that. I have so much respect
for them. That's very different.
Yes. But if I am the type of person who can do something more, and I do feel affected to that extent, I will.
Yeah.
I will be that person. And for me, the biggest thing that I think is so important is you and I talk about words all the time and we're obsessed with them. And it's the words first and then the action. Rather than just an action or just the words. I think that's part of...
Well, I think it's words, action, words. It's like...
It's a cycle.
Research, action, saying. But because like you just... They are part of why you do and why you did, you know? So, and that's okay, because, like, the change is, like, constant. And so, I think as a human, you can do one thing and then regret it or have remorse not having done it. But the cycle of inaction isn't broken because you said or wrote or read, like, you know, like those things are entirely compatible, and we should be more comfortable, you know. And I say this all the time, I'm like, oh, I didn't write because I was afraid of, you know, or like, I didn't write this piece because I knew that. And it's like, well, those aren't good enough excuses.
I'm going to myself that, right? You know. Oh, yeah, it's tough, isn't it? It's tough to have. The more and more public conversations we have, the opportunity for you to be so fearful of judgment.
Of the polarization of everyone's...
I'll go away and go, oh, gosh, should I have said that about the Me Too movement? Should I have said this? Should I have been that person? Should I have articulated that? Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think if we learn to be more...
Vulnerable,
brave, and a little bit bolder.
Yeah.
But with the acceptance
of, and the acceptance of failure and the acceptance of being wrong without it being a massive thing. Like, we just found out about the word and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. All that stuff.
I think that's a very good place to wrap it at these 59 minutes.
59 minutes, oh my goodness. So long podcast.
It was so fun.
It was. We just walked around rabbit holes, didn't we? We just kind of jumped in and out.
It's the whole world.
It's the whole point. So thanks so much, Christina. Thank you guys for listening. I will be posting all of Christina's information down in the description. So please click like, follow, subscribe, favorite, whatever other label you would like to put on the actions that you might or might not take.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Hope you guys enjoy this. I hope you have a fun weekend because it is Friday. And I will speak to you soon. Bye.